Thank you. Thanks for having me, Harbor. It's been, it's probably been about 6 months since I was here, so thank you for the opportunity, and thank you, Katie, if you're watching this and doing an okay job, hopefully. I am a college minister in Somerville. I work at Tufts and Lesley Universities for Sojourn Collegiate Ministry, and I've lived here for about 7 years, and even since starting to guest speak at Harbor, we've had a second daughter, Lily, who is here, our first daughter, who will be mentioned later in this sermon, is back in the Kids Harbor, and she was pretty excited to be back here. So I'm going to zero in on Psalm 46, and I'm just going to start by reading it. Psalm 46 goes, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore we will not fear that the earth should change, that the mountains shake in the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains tremble with its tumult. Selah. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy habitation of the Most High. God is in the midst of the city, it shall not be moved. God will help it when the morning dawns. The nations are in an uproar, the kingdoms totter. He utters his voice, the earth melts. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Selah. Come, behold the works of the Lord. See what desolations he has brought on the earth. He makes war cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the shields with fire. Be still and know that I am God. I am exalted among the nations. I am exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge, Selah. So first off, if the Selahs kind of threw you, I left them in there. Those are in the original text. They resolve the meter of the poem, and so I'm trying to get better at reading poetry, and so actually leaving those in helps you kind of have the phrase, and it's sort of a meaningless word. It doesn't have an exact translation. It just sort of is like, okay. But reading through this psalm, it starts out solid. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help. Therefore, we will not fear. That's great. I love that. I love encouragement. And then it kind of gets off the rails a little bit. Starts talking about the earth should change, mountains shake, seas are roaring up. That's not great. And then starts talking about war. Nations are in kingdoms totter. Nations are fighting each other. There's bows, there's spears. We're talking about climate change and war, two things that are definitely in the news right now, and that kind of sucks because it seems like nothing changes. And when you get encouragement like this, and you think about, well, whoever was writing this, Psalm 46, maybe written in 300 BC, it's difficult to think, well, they were worried about the same things that I am worried about now, the same things that we see in the world right now. And yet I'm supposed to just have confidence. I'm supposed to be still and know that God is God. But I'll be honest, it doesn't resolve my worry. It doesn't resolve my anxiety, my tension when I read something like this. And at the beginning there, it says, I will not fear. We will not fear. Fear's a really interesting thing. So I am, you can ask my wife, I'm the king of post-holiday blues. And so I really love that I get to deliver a message the week after Easter. I am the classic, like January 2nd, I'm the one that's like sitting on the couch just like, what even is there? You know, it's just bleak winter now. And Easter's the same. We had a big Easter at our house. We sprinted back from church to get the ham into the oven. Had a bunch of people come over. It was awesome. But as soon as we all cleaned up and, you know, we had all of our leftovers in the fridge, I was just like, oh, what is there now? Just, it's, you know, I know it was a nice week, but of course it's Boston, so of course it's going to, like, get cold or rainy or something like that. It's happening already. And so this feeling of, hey, Easter's great. We did it. We made it through Lent, and now we're here at this time of celebration, and Lent is supposed to be like 40 days of sort of contemplation and prayer and thinking about things. Easter is supposed to be 50 days, 10 more days of celebration. But already this week, I am back to where I was of I'm worried about the world, I'm worried about myself, and I've got a lot of fear in my life. So I think this is an appropriate time to talk about fear and what role it plays in our lives. And of course, I'm going to talk about my daughter, who is right here. Her name is Virginia, and we call her Ginny. She's the greatest. That is her with our youngest, Lily, opening up their Easter baskets. And something's interesting. She's 3 and a half. Something's like really interesting going on, like with her. So a couple weeks ago, my wife and I were putting the kids to bed, read stories, prayed, got everything all set up, and we're leaving the room. And she says, "Hey, don't turn the lights off. I don't want to go to bed because every time you do that, the man comes out." So my wife and I look at each other and we're like, "What are you talking about? What are you talking about?" She goes, and she, and this is, you ever talk to kids, they say things with just this like straight face. Like they don't know that this is the craziest thing you've ever heard. She points across the room. There is a big basket that's kind of like the hamper for winter clothes. She points to that and she says, "Every time I wake up in the middle of the night, I see a man's face in that basket." And we go, "All right, okay." So we just sort of jump into action. My wife sits down next to her and says, "Hey, you know, there's nothing to worry about. There's no man." I go to the basket. I kind of rifle through a little bit. Maybe something in here looks like a face when the lights are off. I haven't grabbed the basket, and I took it outside, and I left it in the hallway that night. We assured her, "Hey, nothing's wrong. Don't have to worry about it. Basket's gone. No man." She said, "All right, okay, I'll go to sleep." Next morning, we go in there, and without even asking her, she goes, "The man came back." I go, "What are you talking about? We moved the basket." She goes, no. "This time he looked through the wall at me." All right, so this is where I digress and say, we live in Somerville. Old house, over 100 years old. I don't know. I don't know, okay? That's all I'm saying. I don't know if anything creepy has happened. Never seen a ghost. But also, you can't rule it out, okay? So, like, It could be real. I hope it's not. We've managed our fear with the man ever since. It's been something that we've done basically since like the last couple of weeks. We've done every single night this kind of song and dance about, all right, we're checking for stuff. It's not there. We're okay. Everything's going to be good. No man. It's okay. And one of those nights, we kind of went through things and we were sitting on the couch afterward, and my wife and I talked about how It's really kind of sad that our 3-year-old or 3.5-year-old, she's already starting to experience fear. That's really tough. Because fear is something that unfortunately never goes away. It's something that the innocence of being a child kind of gets broken at that point. And that, yeah, she's afraid of all kinds of stuff right now. She's afraid of not getting enough dessert. She's afraid of when we're driving to school, we pass by this field, and there's a bunch of geese there, and she's like afraid that we'll drive past it too fast and she won't be able to like say hi to the geese. But very soon, she's going to start worrying about the same things that I worry about, right? Am I going to find fulfillment in life? Is my career going to provide the stability and the security that I want it to? Are people going to love me? All of those fears are things that we live with. And there's never really something that tells us, even as many Psalms as we read, it's really difficult to kind of go through and to understand, is my fear ever going to go away? It's kind of a mode of living. And especially in this time leading up to Easter and Lent, I've been thinking about fear a lot. Because I've realized that like 90% of my actions, basically everything other than just like staying alive, is dedicated to me making sure that I'm not afraid anymore. I say things, I do things, I make sure that these fears that are always swelling around me, that they're, you know, pushed to the side. And so what do I do? You know, what do I do? Do I tell my daughter that, hey, you're afraid of things right now and you're always going to be afraid of things? That doesn't seem right. That doesn't seem hopeful. That doesn't seem like encouragement. That doesn't seem sustainable. And so over the course of Lent, I have, you know, gone through this journey of fear, and I found a pretty interesting resource in one of the readings I had to do for class, actually. So I introduce you to Saint Benedict. There he is. He's this old dude, and you can see in his arms, it's not the Bible. It says Regula. That's Latin for rules. And if you're ever interested in monks, nuns, monastic communities, especially those that kind of come out of the Middle East and especially in Europe, St. Benedict is pretty much the reason why we have these. He wrote a thing called The Rule of St. Benedict, which is very small but extremely influential. Pretty much any Catholic, Protestant, whatever, community that's organized around communal living, understanding God, getting closer to God, he's kind of the source of that. And this rule, if you're familiar with nuns or monks, if you have any kind of understanding of what you might expect, it's all in there. All right, we're going to wake up 6 times a day. We're going to make sure that we're going to wake up 7 times throughout the day to make sure that we pray. We're going to limit our food. We're going to live in community. We're going to have times where we're talking. We're going to have times when we're silent, times when we labor. It's all in there. And it's presented very kind of like in a dry way. Benedict is considered one of the church fathers, and so especially post the writing of the New Testament, a lot of people were sort of grappling, like, all right, how do you live this Christian life? And some folks kind of landed on, all right, it's going to be in community. It's going to be with each other, and we're going to have these disciplines around our interactions to make sure that we're focused on the right thing. And real quick, a fun story about St. Benedict that I learned is that this rule of St. Benedict, it should be actually called part two, the first attempt that he had at creating a monastic community, it was so harsh that everybody who was in it with him ended up started hating him. They poisoned him, and in the middle of the night, they threw him out of the church. And that's great because I love, as someone who like wants to be in ministry, I love that these old guys were never, like, they weren't nailing it every single time. It wasn't just like, hey, you know, I'm going to do an event, like the concept of monastery, and it's going to be great. So this is round two, and it actually caught on, you know, round two. It's like, all right, I'll make it a little bit less harsh. Maybe we'll go full loaf of bread every day instead of half loaf. But I think the beauty in his work, I mean, you can kind of read it as just like, well, this is, you know, these are a bunch of rules. The beauty in his work really came out in kind of a hidden section. He talks about silence a lot and about how silence is something that brings on humility. And he has this quote in here about why humility is a really important mode of understanding yourself and understanding God. It says, when all these steps of humility have been mounted, the monk will presently attain to the love of God, which is perfect and casts out fear. He acts now not through fear of hell, but for the love of Christ, out of good habit and a delight in virtue. And that's a really interesting jump he makes there. He goes, the reason why we're doing these things, from humility to making sure that we're limiting the things that we do to living in community, the reason why we're doing those things is so that we don't become afraid. So we don't become afraid. These disciplines that we're doing are about experiencing fear. That's a really interesting connection. See, I grew up in a more high church environment. Things like Lent, things like spiritual disciplines were part and parcel with Christian education. And for a long time, I always thought, all right, you give something up, and what you're doing there is you're sort of proving to God that he's bigger than candy or something. Making sure that I can put these things away so that I can pick up God, I can refocus myself. But that's not what Benedict is doing here. Benedict is saying, the reason why we engage in these disciplines is so that we can experience and process the fear that we have about ourselves. And I like that because he says we can then act not through fear of hell, and he's not talking about fiery Dante's Inferno type hell. He's talking about the hell that separates us from God, a hell where our fears come true. We don't do things because we fear hell, because we fear consequences. We do things out of a genuine love of Christ. So the thing is I avoid fear like crazy. I talked about it. All the things that I do in my life are either trying to directly assuage fear or directly try to address how fear is moving on. Sometimes I just try to forget about it. Sometimes I focus on something else. But these disciplines, these spiritual disciplines, are about experiencing fear. We actually had a monk from the Society of St. John the Evangelist, which is a monastery in Boston. It's on the Charles River. It's right next to Harvard. Yeah, there's a monastery there. 30 monks. And I learned this. Half the monks are in their 30s. The monk that I talked to was younger than me, which I thought that by becoming a monk, you just became older. You looked like St. Benedict, like, immediately. But he's like, no, I, you know, grew up listening to, like, Radiohead. Like, I was like, oh, that's awesome. But I brought this up. I said, you know, what do you think about this whole discipline is about managing fear thing? And he just looked at me and he goes, fear is the root of all sin. Fear is the root of all sin? Has anyone heard that before? No? I grew up in the church. I'd never heard that before. And he just said, yeah, that's the deal. That's the deal. We talk about that all the time. I was like, oh, St. Benedict, you gotta put that higher on the list, right? That has to be something that, I don't know, really jumps out of you. Fear is the root of all sin. And the reason he says that fear is the root of all sin is because fear is the thing that makes us, that compels us to look for stuff that God says he's got, right? All the stuff that I mentioned, love, acceptance, stability, all of those things. Fear is the thing that makes us look outside of God for those things, right? To say, I don't know if someone's going to love me. So here's the things that I have to do in my life to make sure I can secure for myself that love. And it's not going to be from God. It's going to be in some other way. And that's why fear is the root of all sin. When we think of sin, not in terms of just like, you know, mistakes or crimes or something like that. Sin in terms of separation from God. Fear is the thing that makes us want to separate from God and do all this stuff on our own. For Lent this year, I had a really interesting experience. So I decided to, and I do this every year, give something up. I gave up idle screens. Okay, so I said, anytime I have idle hours, like any time between my classes, any time between ministry events, when I'm waiting for something to happen, when I'm getting on the subway, I'm not going to look at my phone. Okay, and especially too, when we put the girls away for bed, when we come out, my wife and I, we're not going to, like, you know, just immediately go to watch TV, that kind of stuff. So if it wasn't for work or if it wasn't for, like, immediate logistics, no screens. And I went into that thinking, all right, this is going to be tough. I'm going to be bored, right? I love reading the news. I love being updated on sports. And I just thought, okay, well, I'm going to, you know, not have this time. Maybe I'll read my Bible during that time. Maybe I'll actually do other work. But what I can tell you is that I actually had, like, an emotional breakdown every single day because I realized that screens were this thing that pretty much were keeping me from understanding anything about myself. Screens were this way that I was sort of just, you know, atrophying myself to, like, not process my fears. I'm about to graduate from school with my MDiv. We have a one-year-old and we have a three-and-a-half-year-old. We're thinking about maybe buying a house, which is a crazy process, especially right now and in this market. There's a lot of stuff to be afraid of and a lot of stuff I'm thinking about. And really giving up these screens just made all that stuff just, like, rush in immediately. And so this was a really weird 40 days of Lent. It was crazy. And honestly, it's been really tough because I didn't have any mechanisms, or I don't think I was focused on the mechanisms that you need in your life to process all those fears. And people to talk to, communities to kind of surround yourself with, to be like, hey, I'm just thinking about the general future. Can you just be here and listen to me sort of freak out for a second? And though it's been tough, I realize that it's a huge blessing to actually have that stuff, to actually say and to feel and to think these things that I'm afraid of. Stuff that I am sure is common among most of us in this room. Stuff that is just, what is it about life that makes me constantly think that I need something else? That right now isn't good, and that whatever that next thing is, maybe I buy something, maybe I go somewhere, maybe I have a different job, maybe that thing is going to make me happy. Fear is the root of all sin. And I'm convinced now more than ever that if you don't want to sin, you got to get acquainted with your fears. And that is really difficult because you can talk about fear, but that is not the same as experiencing it, right? We could talk about, especially my daughter, saying, oh, there's this, you know, I see this man who comes, and maybe it's a ghost, maybe it's something else, I hope it's not a ghost, that comes in, and I see that. It's so much different when you're talking about it with the lights on than when it's at night, and I understand that she's in the dark, and she feels that fear. That's tough. That is tough. And so if we turn to this Psalm 46, there's a renewed understanding that comes from these words. I used to think that I was supposed to read the Bible, feel better, and that was the end of it. That's what I used to think. I used to think, that, and if I didn't, it was that there was something I didn't understand, that there was something that I was missing, that maybe I wasn't in the right headspace. But really, and especially the Psalms, and the reason why it always happens that every time I preach here, I'm always doing something about poetry or the Psalms or something like that. The Psalms are something that they're not just this prescriptive, you read it, you're encouraged, be still, know that I am God. A Psalm is something that you experience. A Psalm is something that speaks to you in your life right now. It is timeless. You're reading it not as the author of this Psalm in 350 BC. You're reading it as yourself right now. You're reading it as somebody who's worried about the war in Ukraine, who's worried about climate change, who's worried about everything that might happen, you know, your enemies, your friends, communities that might be forming or breaking, things that seem like they're changing, maybe a little too fast. You read it as an intervention into your own life. You experience it. And that's tough because it says, be still. And those aren't just words you read. Those are words you have to listen to and sit with. Be still is, Nate, don't look at your phone. Okay? Be still and actually spend a second realizing that you're afraid. Spend a second knowing that these things are ways that your life is being changed and dictated. Because there are going to be solutions to your fear that separate you from God. There are going to be a million solutions to your fear that separate you from God. And you might not be aware that those solutions are separating you from God unless you have an awareness of it. Be still. God is with us. It's a reminder that if we can experience fear, it will bring us closer to God. That we will see these things that bring us into community with one another, that reassure us that love, stability, those things are always going to be with us. And so I think a really interesting thing is that you're never going to not fear. You're never going to not fear. It comes up. The reason why St. Benedict created his community and the reason why Christians have been doing things like church forever is that you have to create these systems in your life where fear is being assuaged by your friends, by your family, by people in your life, sustainable things, right? Not by consumption, not by something where the grass is greener, not by that next job, but something where somebody can say, hey, I'm afraid of that too. But we're going to get through this together. And so I'm going to leave you with these three, right? I'm going to leave you with the words of my monk friend. Fear is the root of all sin. But I also want to say, fear can only be conquered when you experience it. And this last thing, the thing that I really want you to take away is do not let it separate you from God. Do not let fear separate you from God. Let's pray. Lord, it is a tough life. It is a tough life. Having anxiety, having fear are things that come part and parcel with being human. And realizing that that's part of our free will, realizing that's part of just how we worry and how we process things, that is tough. But God, give us the ability to just know that. Give us the ability to know and to realize ways that fear is dictating our actions. To be aware of where you are in all of this. To have the discipline to come back to you. God, give that to us. And please, God, let this process bring us in community with one another. Amen.